This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Yesterday afternoon, just after 1 p.m., Vermont Adjutant General Steve Gray made this long-awaited announcement.
The Secretary and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force have selected Burlington as the first Air National Guard base for the F-35. Congratulations!
Commenting further on the decision, Cray later said,
"No, I don't believe it was a foregone conclusion. I think the Air Force has a deliberate process to make selections like this."
But opponents of the decision are not finished fighting. One of those who wants to see the decision reversed is Winooski Mayor Michael O'Brien.
"Yes, the announcement was made the F-35 is coming today. That doesn't stop the discussions that will continue to need to go on for the next 6 or 7 years."
So mixed feelings around the state today as Vermonters digest the news, and we're going to reflect on it with your input. Let us know how you feel about the Air Force decision and what you think it will mean for the state, both for the people who live and work around the airport or in the Guard, and for the rest of the state's economy. You can share your thoughts with those already coming in on Vermont Edition's Facebook page, or you can call us at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Lisa Ventris is president of the Vermont Business Roundtable, which supports the basing. Paul Fleckenstein is a member of the Stop the F-35 Coalition. They are in the studio with me today to talk about some of the reasons for their organization's positions. Welcome to the program. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul, let me start with you. What was your initial reaction when you heard yesterday's decision?
The Air Force has made an unconscionable decision. What they've decided is to base a first strike warplane that's 4 times louder than the F-16, the F-16, which has already decimated neighborhoods around the airport. They decided to base the F-35 in the most populated area of Vermont, and it will have a disastrous impact on thousands of working class Vermonters who are around the airport, who live and work there.
Were you surprised by the decision?
I was not surprised. If you look at the powerful interests behind the basing, all of whom stand to economically or politically benefit, like the Business Roundtable or like the Chamber of Commerce or like Senator Leahy, it's not surprising.
Lisa Ventris, what about for you, your reaction?
My reaction was the opposite of that. I was very, very happy, and I just want to congratulate the men and women of the Vermont Air Guard. It's just a tremendous validation of their expertise and their well-earned reputation. So members of the roundtable and other representatives from the business community are very happy about this, number one, because this retains 1,100 jobs that are high wage earners, well-skilled, highly skilled technical workforce. And so from an economic development perspective, that's one tremendous benefit. I would say, though, at the same time that this is it's an investment in the future for the airport as well. And so those benefits are uppermost in our minds.
Paul mentioned that organizations, certain organizations, and he included yours, stand to benefit from this decision. I'm not sure as a roundtable you do, but your component parts, you know, why is this a good thing for the businesses that you represent?
You're right. We don't stand to benefit directly from that. But to the extent that this helps to secure the important infrastructure for Vermonters for the next 40 or 50 years, that's a tremendous advantage that we now have that was uncertain. I didn't know which way it was going to go yesterday. So I was very, very happy to hear that. So in terms of securing investments and having some predictability about where those workers are going to be and the growth of the mission for the Air Guard, that's a tremendously good thing for those people individually and then for the other support businesses that that are underneath the Air Guard.
Paul, your organization does not support the F-35, but do you agree with that economic argument that this makes sure that those jobs in the Air National Guard are retained and that this is good for the business community?
I think you have to step back a little bit and see this as a victory for the wrong priorities. This is a boondoggle weapons project. You know, we can see it as a victory that puts the profits of Lockheed Martin over the interests of ordinary people. And we have a boondoggle weapons program that puts the military contractors or the military-industrial complex above what society really needs. All pork barrel military spending creates jobs. I mean, that's how they market them. That's the PR of them. But we also know that military spending creates a fraction of the jobs in that the equivalent amount of money in healthcare and infrastructure and education and in clean energy would make. So it's really a question of what the priorities are. There are serious problems. There are millions of children hungry. Food stamps are being cut. There's a climate crisis. And this is a decision to put more resources into military spending. And by the way, it's important to note that the Air Force did not say that this was the only mission possible for the Vermont Air Guard.
So it said it was the only mission on the table that they knew of, but the Air Force and the Air Guard had never said that this would mean the closure of the Guard base.
Right, and that's what the Air Force said, yeah.
So, but on that economic picture, let me just push you a little bit here and say, okay, so if you're saying that it would maintain jobs, this is designed to keep the jobs that are in the military that we have. Why isn't that a good thing for the economy of the state, or how would you replace that economic growth or economic stability if you are successful in not bringing the F-35 here?
There's $1 billion a year Pentagon pipeline into Vermont, and it flows through Senator Leahy's office. And all of the economic interests, the 300 military contractors in Chittenden County, they benefit from this pipeline. And the F-35 is a kind of mascot. It says, we're open for business. We want more military contracts. And I don't think that's a viable future for Vermont and for this society. We're plowing all this money into weapons, into war, which is part of the process of development that tends to benefit the very rich at the expense of other people. I mean, this is part and parcel.
Although I don't think Guard members would say we're the very rich, most Guard members.
I'm talking more about this military pipeline.
Sure. But how would you replace that? You know, if you say that is not sustainable, that's not what we want for the state, how would you replace that money that currently is coming in?
Well, our congressional delegation, Senator Leahy, should fight for redirection of that money to what we really need. We need money into education so students can afford to go to college. We need to not be cutting food stamps. We need to provide public housing for the thousands of homeless families in Vermont. That's what we need to do. They should not be representing the establishment, the military-industrial complex. They should be representing the needs of Vermonters.
Lisa Ventris, your organization, the Business Roundtable, has long been advocating for more money into education, more educational resources, some of the things that Paul is talking about. And in addition, you know, some people are saying, look, the Business Roundtable and other business organizations say this is great for the Vermont economy, but it doesn't fit with the picture of Vermont that's being promoted for tourism and for bringing people into the state. And maybe it's not necessarily such a great economic benefit if, in turn, it means that people don't see Vermont in quite the same way.
Well, I would argue that this helps paint an even bigger picture about Vermont as a thriving economy and a diverse place to live, work, and play. We have world-class cheesemaking, skiing, maple syrup production, captive insurance, and now we have an elite Air Guard unit here that's the first in the country to fly these planes. And the technical skills and transferable skills that are developed within that particular industry can be applied in a variety of different other sectors in our broader economy. I would also just say, you know, we live in the world we live in, and we have to have a strong defense.
So you don't see this idea of we've got cheesemakers, we've got great skiing, and we have Warcraft. You don't see those as two things that are going to compete with one another, two images.
You know, I think we need a diverse economy. We need all of the things that I talked about. Yes, we do also need to invest in pre-K to workforce readiness education programs. And so we're very actively involved in those things as well. But this was a project that was going to base the next generation of fighter jets. And this is an area that we could compete in. And there was a very rigorous process to vet the application, to hear the pros and cons about all the reasons why Burlington and the state of Vermont is the number one choice, and we were successful in helping to bring that home.
We're talking today with Lisa Ventris, who's president of the Vermont Business Roundtable, and Paul Fleckenstein, a member of the Stop the F-35 Coalition. They're sharing their thoughts on the decision yesterday by the Air Force that was announced to base the F-35 fighter jets, 18 of them, in Vermont. And we're hearing from many of you around the state, around the region. We'd love to get your take and your thoughts on if this is a benefit to Vermont, if it's not, and where you see this going in the future. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Vermonter57 posted to say, I just want to give voice to the thousands of Vermonters, businesses, and Guard families who will continue to reap the economic, social, and national security benefits of the F-35 basing. Kudos to Senator Leahy for his advocacy, to Governor Shumlin for having the political will, and to Murrow Weinberger for his reasoned and rational approach to moving forward. But we got a lot of people who are upset with our delegation and our leaders. Chris in South Burlington says, truly appalling. It was a corrupt process from the beginning, as the Boston Globe reported. The National Guard is supposed to protect Americans, not attack their health and home values. Amazing how all the Vermont politicians completely sold out to out-of-state Lockheed Martin. Dennis from West Pollitt says this decision stinks. It reeks of corruption. Vermont and Burlington will actually gain nothing from it, and I think we ought to begin a recall campaign aimed at Leahy, Sanders, and Welch for their roles in this. And CJ in Mansfield piles on, saying, with the long-term cost of the wars rising into the trillions of dollars, the Vermont National Guard being mobilized as cheap expeditionary labor for the Pentagon, war costs shifting to future generations, and the growing realization that flying anything is incompatible with any possible effective response to the climate crisis. Will Senator Sanders' rationale that the F-35 is dumb, but it's better here than there, turn out to be the worst political mistake of his life? Let's go to the calls. John is on the line from Essex. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from Essex, but I actually do live in South Burlington. I have two observations and a challenge. The first observation is that the people who are most vocal telling us that getting the F-35 is worth the price they have to pay are not the people who will have to pay that price. Second, the media, including VPR, have frequently failed to report the key issue that so frightens many of us. You know, the Air Force's own environmental scientist, after 2 years of research, reported that over 1,000 homes will be incompatible with residential use. In other words, unsafe to live in. So our options are to live in an unsafe home or to try to sell it. But Jane, who's going to buy a home that the federal government has labeled unsafe to live in? I don't think you will. I'm sure Lisa won't. My wife and I are close to retirement, and our home is by far our largest asset. If the value of our home is taken from us, our retirement will be very bleak. I'd like to ask the people who are in favor of this plan to think about what would happen to them.
Yeah, John, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. I want to let you know that we have reported on that frequently. When we've done shows on this in the past, that's been one of the discussions that we've had frequently and have asked even the Air Force and Air Guard members about that, because there are a lot of homes that suddenly will be in a different noise envelope. But Lisa, he's asking, you know, what about this? This is not an economically good picture for people who live near the airport.
excuse me. So on the caller's point to me in particular, I actually live in South Burlington, and under the glide path for, the jets and commercial activity as well. So I'm very
familiar
with
it. But not within the new envelope of noise and compatibility?
No. But my work is about a quarter mile off the end of the runway. So from that perspective, I'm there. So part of what I hope the conversation turns toward beginning today is a decision's been made. There are years before this plane is going to, there's a jet is going to land here. And so between now and 2020, we all, all of us, advocates and opponents and the Guard and other partners, have an obligation to try to mitigate some of those impacts on housing and noise so that those communities can participate in that process during the interim. It's a loud instrument. Nobody is denying that. And the noise pattern has shifted. So between now and 2020, beginning today, we should be working together to try to understand how to mitigate some of those impacts.
That may be cold comfort to people who live in the area that's
Understood.
Now in the noise envelope, especially given that the FAA has not said it's going to increase that buyout program, and nobody in the state has said they're going to be putting money towards that for people who live there.
That's right. That's a voluntary program. It's funded by the FAA, not the military, and we all know the condition of the federal budget.
Paul, you wanted to comment?
Yes, I mean, that's a good point. There is no economic benefit for the thousands of Vermonters who live in low and moderate income housing around the airport. It's not disputed that thousands of people are going to be put into a zone called not suitable for residential use. And I think the proponents of the basing just wish this problem would go away. They see it as a PR problem and have not taken it seriously. Residents have been unable to meet with any of the congressional delegation. I think that the overall plan is to displace more families. We already know that 200 homes are now vacant because of the noise of the F-16.
Through the FAA buyout program.
Through the FAA buyout plan. I think they want to expand that zone, and there are plans for more commercial development around the airport. So I think I say there are vested interests. Well, that's what they're interested in, not what's going to happen to thousands of people. And I think the process itself, as one comment said, has been utterly corrupt. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's going to be vulnerable to challenge. This is not over. There will be legal challenges to the Air Force decision. There's a lawsuit, a legal action now to force this to go through the Act 250 process, which it will very unlikely be able to prevail in that because of the severe environmental impact.
And we're going to talk more about that because mm-hmm. Where do we go next and what is this lawsuit, where will it go, is something we want to touch on. But let me posit to you what a couple of other people are saying. Steve says, finally, this is a win for Vermont. Look, if you live next to an airport, you should have thought of this before. Finally, we can see some jobs coming to the area in an anti-business climate. This is certain victory. And Will in Lincoln says, this works for me. It's the sound of freedom. I recall seeing that outside an Air Force base down south. Now, they're going to need to work out the noise abatement. And if I lived in Winooski, I might be concerned about the noise. But I don't know how you can move into those areas and not know you're moving next to an Air Guard base. So, what about caveat emptor? If you bought this house near an airport, there's going to be noise.
People have been living near the airport far longer than, for instance, the F-16s. In the past 5 years, the noise from the F-16s has substantially ramped up. They brought in new planes. They're using afterburners for takeoff.
But we used to have even louder planes before the F-16s.
The population is steadily growing around the airport. I think a business model that depends on sacrificing thousands of people for military contracts, for F-35 basing, for real estate development. Now, that's wrong. We need another direction forward, another kind of economic development policy.
But why don't the people who bought those houses have a responsibility to say, yes, I bought a house near an airport and I knew there was noise. And now there's more noise, but I did buy a place near the airport.
I don't think that people should live in areas that are not suitable for residential use because of the extreme noise. There are health impacts. What about their children? They didn't choose to live in those houses. There's good science. The scientific consensus is that thousands of children will suffer cognitive impacts because of the extreme noise. Children did not sign up for that. People don't have a choice necessarily where to live. The most affordable housing tends to be around the airport. If you're wealthy and you can live out in the suburbs, fine, then you have a choice. If you're not, if you rent, some of the cheapest rental units populated by many recent immigrants are in Winooski, right in the zone that's going to be most severely impacted. So if people are arguing that people had a choice, they're not looking at the reality of who lives around the airport and why.
We're going to continue this. We've got to take a very quick break. We're talking about reaction to the F-35 decision today, hearing from some of you online on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, or you can call in 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Lisa Ventris is president of the Vermont Business Roundtable. Paul Fleckenstein is a member of the Stop the F-35 Coalition. They are with us today sharing reaction to the Air Force decision to base the first round of the F-35 fighter jet at the Vermont Air Guard base in South Burlington. The Guard made the announcement yesterday afternoon. We're also getting your thoughts on this decision and what comes next. Add yours to the mix on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or on Facebook. Or call 1-800-639-2211. We got a note from Sandra who says this is great news for the state of Vermont and the Green Mountain Boys. All the effort and money spent on this debate could have helped the homeless in Vermont. Nick says, yay for the F-35s. I walk on the Burlington International Airport almost every day and watch the F-16s do their drill. I've heard that the Green Mountain Boys in the air and on the ground have won top honors for both flight and ground operations. They all deserve the chance to operate the most advanced technology available. As for the noise, I live less than 1 mile from the airport and work on the airport. Aside for the couple of seconds for each plane, what noise? Charles in Hinesburg, though, says this is incomprehensible that the Air Force would even consider stationing these planes in such a densely populated area. My main concern is we are spending over $1 trillion on this program. The money could be better spent on meeting human and environmental needs. Children, the elderly, and everyone that's trying to make ends meet need food, clothing, shelter, healthcare, education. The mission of the Air National Guard should be for search and rescue, not for killing people in unnecessary wars. And Jonathan says this is a win for Lockheed and the commercial real estate developers. The losers are thousands of Vermont families, seniors, and people with disabilities put in harm's way by the powers that be. Let's go to Lars, who's calling in from Cabot. Hi, Lars. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'd like to just say thanks so much to both panelists. I really respect both of your hard work on this. And as someone in Cabot who's not directly affected, I wanted to maybe offer the perspective that's slightly different. I grew up in Seattle, where we had the Boeing plant. And as a young person there, seeing the space shuttle come in on the Boeing 747s as it was testing was hugely inspiring. And I hope that maybe there's a silver lining here, which is that having this kind of technology based in Vermont does change the narrative a little bit away from the cheese and the maple syrup to a place where the best technology exists and kids have access to it, and perhaps they'll get excited about the opportunities in the STEM fields, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. I hope that this might be a real dividend for us here in Vermont and in the education space.
Lars, thanks for your thoughts on that. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can get a couple more here in, and then we'll go back to Lisa and Paul. Dean's calling in from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Dean. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that all the issues that Paul brings up, nobody could argue with the fact that food stamps, children, education are all very important things. They're only tangentially related to whether we have the planes come to Vermont or not. I am closely related to a person who works at the base, and the direct relationship would be if this person lost their job, that tomorrow I would personally cease to pump about $1,000 a month into the local economy because of the hit that that would take. Not to mention the fact that most all of the young people that work at the base, I'm not one of them, but most of the young people that work at the base have children, and those children didn't choose to have an unemployed mother or father and be struggling either. So I just wanted to put that in, and thanks for taking my call.
Dean, thanks for the call. Fred, you're on the line from Georgia. Hi, Fred. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to get back to the noise problem and the huge number of people who are now going to be consigned to living in unhealthful conditions. That keeps coming up, but it sort of gets answered and not answered as if somehow that isn't crucial. Seems to me that that's crucial. That how can you when there are other choices of place to put these planes, how can the people, the business people of Burlington and the area, be so sure that that this is a positive thing when it's affecting that many people negatively, and the whole city of Winooski, you know, kind of consigning Winooski to the low rung of the ladder.
Yeah, Fred, let me put this to Lisa Ventris, because we were talking about this before the break as well. Lisa, what about this? I mean, really, Fred is saying, put a fine point on it. This noise is incompatible with residential life.
So, first of all, the Air Guard has demonstrated for 67 years that they are willing to work with the community on mitigation issues related to noise, et cetera. So that needs to be understood. And the record of decision also includes references to that as well. So that will be part of the plan going forward. Increasingly, we are seeing investments in the city of Winooski that demonstrate, despite the location and its proximity to the airport and the landing path, that this is still a valuable community that's worthy of investment. So whether it's residential or commercial developments, businesses moving in, St. Michael's College building new dorms for its students. Despite noise issues, those plans are important statements of satisfaction with that area. So with regard to the people in the community, they are not being and will not be exposed to chronic levels of noise all day long, all night long, as some airports in Europe and the United States. We're talking about 4 days a week, six takeoff and landings during that time, 6 minutes a day.
Nonetheless, the Air Force itself has said that's incompatible with residential life.
Well, I would argue that people in Winooski and South Burlington have been living with close to that noise for years, decades already, and finding that they can lead productive, happy lives. So I want us to be careful with our language about health impacts. Yes, it's loud, but no one is going to be suffering, and there's been no scientific evidence to show that for these exposure levels we're talking about, that people are at health risks.
Paul, I know you want to respond to that, so if you don't mind doing that quickly, because I want to make sure we also get to what your organization is going to do next and how you plan to fight this decision.
The extreme noise zone is not the same as it has been. It dramatically expands because this is a plane that's four times louder than the F-16. That's why it expands. There's scientific consensus that this is a level of noise that damages health and cognitive development. The Air Force Environmental Impact Statement included up-to-date research for animals and noise but ignored the last 10 years. So that's a misunderstanding, one of the problems with the Air Force decision. Our group is saying, you know, this is not over. It's at least 6 years until this plane is scheduled to arrive in Burlington. I think we've seen an amazing grassroots movement of thousands of people protesting against this basing. We're going up against the military-industrial complex. No one thought this was going to be easy. This is a disappointing decision at this point. But I think because the process has been so corrupt, there are so many problems with the way that the decision has been made. We're filing legal challenges, and there are other options too. Burlington still has authority over the airport, and 6 years is a long time for new leadership to come into the city.
So not over for you this time.
Not over.
That's Paul Fleckenstein. He's a member of the Stop the F-35 Coalition. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Thank you.
And Lisa Ventris is president of the Vermont Business Roundtable, which supports the basing of the F-35s. Lisa, thank you for your perspective.
Thank you, Jane.
We're still getting many comments from you on how you feel about this decision. Mike in Roxbury says we should all be appalled. An overwhelming majority of Vermonters have been outspoken for years against this. They were invited to be a part of the process, and then the decision of the majority was completely disregarded. But Alpha 16 says anyone who's lived near an airport or railroad crossing or even a schoolyard can attest that from time to time the noise is disconcerting, but in a very short period of time you get used to it and you scarcely notice it. We also have some people commenting with mixed feelings about this decision. Share all of your perspectives on the Vermont Edition Facebook page, or you can go to vpr.net to read all of our reporting. We will, of course, be continuing to update this story as it develops over the next weeks and months. Coming up, VPR Classical host Walter Parker joins us to talk about Messiah Watch, his list of the many performances and sing-alongs of Handel's famous music. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Handel's Messiah is part of the soundtrack to the Christmas season, with the Hallelujah chorus providing an especially familiar refrain. Adding to the tradition is the Messiah sing-along, presented by churches and community groups throughout December. VPR Classical's Walter Parker keeps an ear out for those events in his annual Messiah Watch, and he joins us now. Hi, Walter.
Hi, Jane.
All right, let's jump right in here. We do this every year, and it's so great. I love talking about Handel's Messiah. George Friedrich Handel actually wrote the Messiah in 1742, and he intended it to be a piece of music to be used at Easter time, not at Christmas. Can you remind us of the history of this piece?
Well, it was first performed during Lent, actually, just before Easter. So it's appropriate to that. The actual content of Messiah deals with the complete life of Christ from around Christmas, the birth of Christ, to Easter and the resurrection, and his legacy for us all is dealt with in the final part. So it's really appropriate to be done anytime. Some people still do it in the springtime, but certainly around here it's become associated with the December season.
How did it become so associated with Christmas time?
I think it's just been over time, it's always been popular from Handel's own day right through the 19th century when they tended to do it with the gigantic choirs as often as they could. To the present day, it's always been popular. And I think it's just become part of the festive December season.
Why do you think this is such a popular piece for people to sing along with, non-professionals who come and sing this piece?
Well, I think, first of all, because they've sung it at some time in their past. Because if you're a choral singer, you've surely sung Messiah at some point. So a lot of people know it. They have it a little bit in their voice. It's certainly not because it's easy. It's really difficult singing. But it's also fun music. It's an evergreen. That is, it always sounds fresh. And it always has fun things to sing. If they're difficult, they're at least rewarding.
And you brought in a piece of music to illustrate why you think this is in some ways such a fun piece for people.
Well, I think so, because Handel can be a little bit playful at times in his word depictions. And there's a chorus in part two, "All we like sheep have gone astray." And he gives the singers these passages on astray where they slide a little bit around here as if they're going astray. He illustrates astray in music, and I think anyone can hear how he does that.
Walter, what about Handel's own life? What can you tell us about his life story?
Well, he's originally German, but he found his great success in England, at first doing Italian opera, but then it sort of slid into oratorio, which could be done even during the Lenten season when opera was forbidden as too profligate. And by the time of Messiah in the 1740s, he was a big name, and performances of Messiah have been popular from his time on. In fact, during his day, there were times when even rehearsals would be packed with audience and they'd have to turn people away or they would have to schedule extra performances because they weren't always scrupulous about selling only enough tickets for that concert. Sometimes they would have multiple bookings, as it was, like the airlines, sell the seat a couple of times. And so sometimes they'd have to add a performance.
So he was quite famous, even in his own lifetime.
Oh, yes. Very famous.
Can you give us a range of some of the performances this year? So if people want to make sure they're not turned away or have to, you know, sit outside and listen to everybody else, they can plan it now.
Well, we've got them all listed at the Messiah Watch, vpr.net/classical, and just scroll down for the Messiah Watch. We have some regular performances, that is, they do them annually, such as the Vermont Philharmonic Orchestra and Chorus, Lisa Jablow directing. That will be in Montpelier on Friday and in Barrie on Sunday. And also the Rutland Area Chorus, led by Rip Jackson, always gives performances, two of them usually, on the same day as this Sunday at 3:30 and 7 at Grace Church in Rutland. And the Oriana Singers will be doing the 1754 Foundling Hospital version, which is a particular version. Handel would make adjustments in the performances depending on what singers he had and what his mood was. He would sometimes give this aria to a soprano and then next time give it to a tenor. There are different versions of it, but they're all very similar. And the Foundling Hospital version of 1754 will be done by the Oriana Singers on Friday the 13th in Burlington at St. Paul's Cathedral. And there are a host of sing-alongs. There seem to be even more sing-alongs than usual this year.
And those range all through the month?
They go from this Saturday's in Brattleboro. The Friends of Music at Guildford have an annual one. They've been doing it for decades. And there's one in Charlotte on a Sunday afternoon this week. And then there are many, many more which we have listed here. And they run, the sing-alongs run right through New Year's Day, this one.
So there's something for everyone, not only in terms of what region you're in, but also whether you'd like to sing or you just want to let it all wash over you and not have to be involved in a sing-along.
That's right.
Do you have a recording that you particularly like, just to keep us in the spirit here before we let you go?
Well, I keep coming back to a particular one, which I like because of its overall qualities of performance. The singers are good, the soloists, the chorus is good, it's snappy. It's a period instrument performance, and the forces are a little smaller. The tempo is brisk. Some people might find it a little too quick in places. But I like the overall feel of it. It moves along, and it's got a very joyful feel to it. It's the Gabrielli Consort and Players, directed by Paul McCreesh.
VPR Classical host Walter Parker has been telling us a little bit about Handel's Messiah and the Messiah Watch that he does every year. It's at VPR Classical. We have links, of course, at vpr.net. Walter, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Jane.
Always love hearing that music, Handel's Messiah. And that wraps up today's show. Still getting comments on our earlier discussion about the F-35s being based in Burlington. Enough of This says, just like the healthcare reform, this was poorly planned and executed and rammed down our throats, but I think a lawsuit is a waste of taxpayer money. Leonard says, if the flight path of these jets were going directly over Church Street, you can bet they would never be based here. But Tracy Lynn says, hey, it's about time. I'm very proud of this forward move for our National Guard and our Vermont. And Michael says, this is great. Like anything, there are downsides. There's always the risk of a crash, as there is with the commercial jets flying into and out of the airport, and there is the noise. Nonetheless, this is a great thing for the city and surrounding area. Don't forget to add your thoughts. Go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page and let us know what you think. Tomorrow, we've all heard about the glass ceiling and the fact that there are fewer women in science, math, and engineering jobs. But that's not just bad for women, it's bad for the economy, too. Tomorrow, we'll talk about a new report that recommends ways to get women and girls prepared to enter Vermont's economy. Send your thoughts to vermontedition@vpr.net. And tune in tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.